We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, this is Megan Rapinoe, and I'm Sue Bird. We've decided to turn our crazy IG live show into a podcast for your listening pleasure. Enjoy the show. A Touch More.
New episodes of A Touch More drop Tuesday only on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, my guy, Jack Manuel. And back again, special guest, Nolan Jensen. Fellas, how we doing?
I'm doing well. This was one I was really looking forward to. We get to talk about Joe Harris, Jack and I's guy, for the next 30, 40 minutes. You know, I can't complain over here.
30, 40 minutes. Please. Come on, Nolan. What do I get you on for? 3 hours at least.
So you guys get to listen to Jack talk about Joe Harris for an hour when he's supposed to be talking about Joe Harris instead of just bringing up randomly throughout the show. So, But you can find all the Brooklyn Buzzes on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. This episode's also brought to you by BetOnline.ag and Blue Chew. But guys, looking at Joe Harris, obviously another nice year for him. But how would you summarize, I guess, this slash last season, the 2019-20 season for Joe Harris?
I think an improvement from his 2018-19 campaign. He's really, you know, carved out a niche for himself, and he's starting to really excel in his own role. He's one of those classic, you know, star in his own role type of players. But there's been subtle improvements on both ends of the basketball floor for him. We really saw him pick up after Caris LeVert and Kyrie Irving went down with injury, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that a little bit. But overall, it's another step in the right direction for Joe Harris, I feel like.
Yeah, it was a season where he just took steps forward, and you know, other than January, he shot 31.5%. You know, every other month-by-month split is pretty outstanding. October, 52% from three. November, 41%. December, 42.5%. You know, it was in February, 44.9%. March, you know, 44% on very limited time. So, Joe Harris continuing to do very, very good things, but that question that I'll bring to both of you guys, do you think that he had a better 2019-20 or 2019-20 that we've seen so far, or 2018-19 where he shot, you know, over 47% from the perimeter?
I'll jump in first. I think I would say this season is a better year because he was asked to do a lot more, where last season everything was kind of set up for him. He was kind of in a nice role where there's always a playmaker on the floor, you know, kind of making his life easier. Where this year, we kind of talked about on a previous show, Jack, or might have been the Spencer Dinwiddie pod, where Joe Harris was kind of asked to be the second best player on this Nets team, and they were able to at least stay steady around that 500 mark and contend for the playoffs. So I would say this year was like an improvement, and it was a better season because there was a larger load on his shoulders in comparison to last year.
I don't want to be too drastic, but I'm kind of with Nick. I think he's actually made some leaps and bounds compared to last year. Whereas, you know, obviously he led the league in 3-point shooting percentage, 47.4, won a 3-point contest, kind of came out as one of the best shooters in the league. But this year, for one, he's no longer a net negative defender, which is absolutely amazing to see. And he spent most of his minutes at the three without, you know, off the charts athleticism or abilities. He's always been, I want to say, he hustles a lot on the defensive end. It often hasn't worked in favor for him, unfortunately. But this year especially, I don't think it's really that insane to say that out of all the Nets players, consistently, he was the best high-effort defender. Doesn't mean he's obviously the best defender, but you rarely see him out of position or not giving it his all on that end of the floor. And as Nick said, to reiterate, he had to step up and really be a second, third option for the Nets for, you know, 4-6 weeks, and obviously it kind of burned out in January, but the last couple months he really turned on, shooting above 50% from the field on like 15 points per game and like 45% or whatever it was from three. So I think he actually made a lot of improvements this season compared to last, so I would say that definitely this year.
Yeah, I think he's a better player this year. I think he was probably more efficient in 2018-19. I think 18-19 is the version of Joe Harris where if you have, you know, two superstars, you know, and obviously D'Angelo Russell, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, those guys aren't superstars, but it allows Joe Harris to be that third, fourth guy, and it allows him to be disgustingly, stupidly efficient, which is what he very likely could be next to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving next season. So, yeah, I agree. I think he's a much better player. You know, there's games that stick out, like the Bulls game, and we'll get to those moments in a little bit, where he was, you know, the best player a lot of the time for the Brooklyn Nets. And, you know, I think that for a guy who is, you know, a makeshift shooter and, you know, a castaway by the Cleveland Cavaliers to turn himself into a guy that's going to be earning a fair chunk of cash in the offseason is a heck of development, and a massive shout out to Kenny Atkinson and the rest of the coaching staff there in Brooklyn. He's turned into a quality NBA player and one of the more valuable guys that you can have on any roster.
Yeah, I think in terms of Joe Harris too, I think like last year was a year like, oh shit, it's Joe Harris. He won a 3-point contest. He shot 47% from three. He was on a somewhat winningish team. It's like, all right, we saw you do it 1 year. Let's see you do it again. And a lot of guys have issue doing it again or providing consistency. And Joe obviously isn't shooting the same efficiency, but in terms of like what we see on the court, it's the same guy. And like Nolan mentioned, I think defensively, one thing that sticks out where Joe's never going to lock anybody down, he understands how to play his role defensively. He understands he's not going to ever, you know, be grabbing two steals or two blocks or whatever it might be. But if he puts in effort, that's enough to make him passable defensively, where you don't have to hide him to the highest extent like a guy like Trae Young or something like that. But Jack mentioned some of those great moments from last season. I know this section might go a little bit long, but what do you got for me?
You know, with Joe Harris, unfortunately, the way he plays, I guess you can say unfortunately, he's just so consistent. He doesn't really have too many signature moments. His stats are really reflective of what he is. But one game that really stood out to me personally, and I think Jack just mentioned it, was the Chicago Bulls game, 12th game of the year, you know. The Nets are 4-7. The world is kind of falling. Kyrie Irving's out. Caris LeVert's out. It really appeared like a must-win game for the Nets at that time. And he came in. He only shot 2 of 8 from three that game. But, you know, the other aspects of his game in which he improved really shined in that performance. He ended up dropping 22 points, 8 assists, which I believe was a career high for him at the time, shooting above 50% from the field, even though he only shot 25% from three. And that kind of ushered in, like, this whole Joe Harris. I mean, it was a thing that we mentioned, you know, multiple times if you watched the Brooklyn Nets, that he's more than a shooter. But it kind of seemed like this year he got more, like, mainstream acknowledgement for being more than just a catch-and-shoot guy. And that really showcased. That was really shown in that Bulls game, I feel.
Yeah, that was by far and above my... I've mentioned that game on Brooklyn Buzzers probably at least once every two or three episodes. And other games that stick out, you know, he had, you know, 10 games where he scored 20 points or more. And for a shooter, you know, a pure shooter, and that's his role on the team, that's a heck of an achievement. And the ones that do stick out are the top scoring games against Miami, where he scored 25 points, went 5-9 from three. The New Orleans Pelicans game, where he played 37 minutes, went 5-9 from three again, scored 24 points. you know, a lot of good games from Joe this season, and he was asked to do a lot more because, like you guys mentioned at the top, with the injuries aplenty, there was plenty of games where Joe Harris was the second most talented player on the Nets roster. And for most of the season, you know, he stepped up.
Yeah, no, he had a lot of big moments. I'd say that Chicago Bulls game was probably the best game of his entire career. Like Nolan mentioned, you know, he didn't necessarily kill it from three, but you saw him doing a lot of things in that game in terms of his passing, which I think has improved too. And I'm surprised neither of you mentioned the fist pump, which was one of the biggest.
I was going to say, yeah.
That's one of the biggest moments of the season. We got to get you guys some t-shirts of that. But also, Jack and I were lucky enough to watch the Pacers and Nets game, and Joe had a really clutch period during that game where he had a reverse layup and a big three that ended up putting Spencer Dinwiddie in position to hit that game winner. So I'd say Joe probably is a guy that hits more clutch threes in this team that doesn't get recognition just because it's not necessarily the game winner. But typically throughout the year, he hits a lot of big shots. And this is going to be a dumb question asking you two, but was last year a success or disappointment?
Oh, it was for me, it was a glaring success. And I think he's even going to be better next season as he's continued to make these subtle improvements throughout his career. You just mentioned the clutch thing. Joe Harris, last two seasons, is shooting about 50% in the clutch, better than 40% from three. So with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in the roster and their unparalleled, you know, gravitational pull on the defensive side of the basketball floor, especially in late game scenarios, if Joe Harris is open in the corner, if he gets a backdoor cut, or if he's inbounding, he can be really deadly. And that's something that I'm obviously looking forward to. But to go back to your point, yeah, it was a success for me. You know, a lot more was asked of him this season. For the most part, outside of January, he stepped up and answered the call. It was a great season for Joe Harris.
Yeah, call him Joey Jordan, Mr. Clutch.
Okay.
Yeah, it was S-U-C-C-E-E-S. That's why you spell success. Well, it's not, but that's how Bart spelled. And it was a massive success for Joe Harris. You know, continuing to step up, I'm really intrigued to see what he can do alongside our two superstars whenever they are healthy. I think he's going to be so damn important. And I'm hoping he gets that bag, Josiah, you know, gets into his deep pockets and gets into the luxury tax out for Mr. Harris, because he's going to be important and he deserves that money.
Yeah, definitely a success for Joe. I think if anything, he doubled down being the role player that we know he can be. And next to a guy like Nolan mentioned, Katie and Kyrie, his life is going to be so much easier. I mean, his efficiency will probably get back to the previous season and maybe even higher, obviously, depending on how things go. But what would you say are the strengths of Joe's game?
Outside of the three-point shooting, which is obvious, he's really carved himself out as a really good cutter. He makes great decisions off the catch if defenders do run him off the line, which we saw this year. There's obviously rooms in which he can improve. Like, I think he can implement a mid-range shot. The Kenny Atkinson thing is no longer an excuse in that regard. He could really use a left hand more often than he does. We obviously often see the reverse layups, and I think that's kind of added necessity because you rarely actually see him go and finish with that left. Yeah, that's about it for me.
Yeah, I've got, in terms of the three-point shooting, he is 15th in the league in efficiency for guys taking, you know, a reasonable amount of attempts. He goes up, you bump him up to 7th if you factor in guys that are shooting 5 attempts or more. So, you know, and this was considered a quote-unquote down season for Joe Harris because of that, you know, lackluster January from what we normally expect from him. So just imagine he has an average January. You know, he's back up the top of the league in that. You know, the clutch percentage that Nolan mentioned, I think that deserves some mentioning as well. You know, he was really, really good when it came to clutch moments when the Nets did need him. He was hitting big shots. He was making the right plays. In terms of the team overall, the team's 6.5 points per 100 possessions better when he is out there. And I just looked up his driving percentage just to do a little bit of research. He has a better driving percentage than Spencer Dinwiddie, 48.9%. Which is, you know, something. I certainly didn't think that would be the case. I think Joe makes probably better decisions, and because he doesn't do it so damn consistently, you know, he's doing it three attempts a game. Spencer's doing it over 7. You know, the only player he's essentially lower than is Kyrie, who's taking some decent enough attempts. You know, Chioza, you know, is at 58%, but he's only taking one a game. Wilson Chandler's only taking one a game himself. So we've mentioned last season that the driving Joe is something that we really liked and we really sought to see. And in terms of those weaknesses, I'm with Nolan on that respect. You know, when he has someone who is defending him, and we mentioned this, I think, on a rewatch as well, Nick, when there is a Joel Embiid down there, Rudy Gobert down there, and he does make the drive, you know, he still does show that aggression. he doesn't have the counter. You know, he just does the same sort of thing. So the scouting report is, you know, just do what you can to force Joe out of his right position, because he's not going to be able to make the requisite sort of reactionary moves. He's not that as good as a defender he was this season. He's still never going to be an amazing defender. He's going to be an average-ish defender for a very long time because he shows effort. And, you know, I remember just watching a video of him speaking about sort of his time at college, and he was sort of speaking, you know, he has all the right mentality and all the right little things, but at the end of the day, he's never going to be Kawhi Leonard, Patrick Beverley, or Marcus Smart. And he sometimes, I think he could be a little bit too unselfish. I think he needs to be a bit more of a guy where it's just like, look, I'm one of the best three-point shooters in the league. Get me the ball and let me shoot it, rather than sort of just seeding and trying to be a good teammate. I think there's times where that can be a negative.
Yeah, calling for the ball a little bit, being a little bit more aggressive, especially considering some of the teammates he had to play with this season. But getting back to one of Nolan's strengths, and I think this is something that really sticks out, is his off-ball movement and then his reactionary stuff. Like, he reacts to the secondary part of the play. You know, Kyrie or Spencer or Karis drives on the pick and roll. There's an open guy. They're trying to close out on Joe. He's going to read that the defender and either take the good three or he's going to drive inside. And I think that's why he's such a perfect complementary player. And it's just understanding his role, like you guys mentioned. Really, the only thing for him is just kind of continuing to improve defensively and add that mid-range game. And like Jack mentioned, that left hand would be great because he doesn't have to go to the reverse, where I think the longer you're in the league, everyone kind of gets your scouting report. But any other notes or things on Joe's game where you think isn't noticed enough?
I think when it comes to the reverse, I was just going to say, Noel, I think when it comes to the reverse, Spencer Dinwiddie shot like once with his left hand this season, I think, went on a drive. So it's not that I think Joe Harris can't improve it. And I think that he said this time and time again, and plenty of the Nets players this time and time again, when they're working with their respective assistant coaches, they don't move outside what they're asked to do on the floor. And Joe is asked to make straight line drives, shoot the three, move off ball, create, you know, a bit of havoc when he's moving off the ball and getting some backdoor screens from Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan. Whereas I think that in the off season or right now, whatever he's doing, whenever the facilities do open, you know, he's obviously been going in, you know, to get his ankle rehabbed a little bit as well. I think that he's going to be doing some other things, because one thing that we hear guys say is that, you know, they want to keep practicing the skills that they're already good at and make them A+. Well, Joe Harris is A+ at shooting. I want him to probably, and maybe this is probably improvements that they need to go to, I'll probably save that actually for a little bit, but I think that there is a part where I think he is going to practice certain things and we might see some extra moves from him, because we can say that probably about, you know, probably 80% of the roster on the Brooklyn Nets. It's just like, well, I didn't know Karis LeVert was going to be able to do that. I didn't know Spencer was going to turn into an all-star. The improvements that these guys continue to make in this environment continues to surprise me in a positive way, because the coaching staff is so focused. The players are so driven and, you know, quote unquote. And I think that Joe is going to continue to improve. And I'm excited to see what he can be, you know, if he comes back for the playoffs. And hopefully he can have some big moments there and also in 2020, 2021.
With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on. From the online casino to poker and blackjack, they're bringing Vegas to you. Missing the NFL? No problem. BetOnline has live daily Madden NFL 20 simulations you can bet on. You can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even Nathan's hot dog eating contest. All open 24 hours a day and all online. Use promo code BLUEWIRE to join today and receive your new welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online wagering solution.
Guys, looking to last longer and go a few extra rounds? Get to BlueChew.com. Blue Chew has the first ever chewable that brings your performance in the bedroom to another level. They got the same active ingredients that Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. And since they're chewable, they work faster. You can take them any time of day, day or night, even on a full stomach. Plus, you don't need to go to the doctor's office or spend time waiting in the pharmacy line. Blue Chew's online physician is free of cost, and once approved, your order ships straight to your door in discreet packaging. Here's a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com. Get your first order free when you use promo code BLUEWIRE. Just pay $5 for shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code BLUEWIRE.
Yeah, I'd spot on, Jack. Well, getting to those improvements, what would be some improvements you'd like to see in Joe's game?
it's hard to say that this is an improvement. It's more of a personal want for me. I want to see Joe Harris take some unselfish, you know, maybe not perhaps off the dribble, but there's been instances where he's had, you know, room to hoist a three, but because it's not a favorable look, and I understand it's kind of hard to ask a player to completely alter his mental approach when it comes to shooting, but, you know, I think he shot between 5 to 6 three-point attempts this season. I'm not asking for that to increase, and that probably is going to stay around the same volume once Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving incorporate into his offense. But unselfish shots is definitely something I want to see. As I mentioned earlier, I like the implementation of the mid-range shot. So it just gives him another extra versatility, so he doesn't have to go for the line drive to the hoop or hoisted threes. Just another thing he can have in his bag. And as we mentioned too, it's just the left hand. You know, we only see Joe Harris drive right or go to that now patented reverse layup, which is really nice, and he's quite good at them. But as you know, scouting reports are going to say, hey, Joe Harris gets to the interior, gets into the paint, try to force him to that left. So if he can incorporate that into his offensive repertoire as well, it obviously will do him, you know, favors.
What are you thinking, Jack, for areas you want to see Joe improve?
I think they're essentially the same things that Nolan said. You know, obviously counters around the rim, whether it be a left hand or whether it be, you know, trying to drive with movement. And you know, obviously Joe Harris isn't going to have the most fancy Euro step in the world, but you know, I think that something like that along the way, and again, shooting more bad threes. You know, watch some Davis Bertans film. I think the coaches also need to give him, you know, the green light there as well, because I think Kenny always is quite conservative in terms of the schemes that he did run. It's just like, all right, let's take good shots, let's take the best shots, that's what's going to win us games analytically. And then we started to see Joe take some mid-ranges from the elbows and the free throw, sort of the charity stripe a little bit. And he looks good there. And I think that that's an area where he can continue to stay well. You know, he shot, I think, about 48% from that area this season. You know, I think that those counter moves, you know, just being able to be naturally reactive and sort of just play basketball rather than sort of be like, all right, I've got to shoot a three here. I've got to drive here. I have to do these two moves. These are what I'm really, really good at. And sort of just be a bit... And I think we saw a bit more sort of pizzazz in his game this year compared to seasons past, because last year was the breakout where he was just shooting absolutely lights out from every single spot on the floor. And then this year, we sort of started to see his game round out and him become a more confident NBA player and confident in the talents that he does have. You know, he can get shots off against plenty of guys. So I think that... continue to hone that mid-range game, because I think that's where it's really going to matter. You know, in the playoffs, you know, he's going to be able to have to take, you know, a dribble in and, you know, shoot from there. You know, I think that he's continuing to hone his passing game, because I think as well, when on those drives, having a Jared Allen down there or having a guy to kick it out to, you know, obviously, you know, Torian Prince, whoever it might be, you know, next season, you know, I think continuing to work on that drive game in terms of finishing and in terms of making decisions out of it as well, because if you've got Rudy Gobert down there, you're not going to be able to finish it in many instances. Not few guys can. So continuing to make the right decisions in those sort of situations as well.
Yeah, you guys were spot on. Obviously, the improvements in terms of adding the mid-range, working on his layup package, continue to improve defensively. And I think I like the point about continuing to improve as a passer, because as he gets better and does it longer, like I mentioned with the scouting report, he's going to get a little bit more attention. They're going to know what he's trying to do. So making sure he hits the pass before he gets himself, you know, into a position where he can't make it. And some of that this season was due to the fact, you know, his teammates weren't great. And like we mentioned, he was the second best player on this team for portions of the year. And obviously that's not ideal for his skill set. So I think just kind of continuing working on your craft. I don't think he has to get substantially better. Even if Joe Harris was completely the same player next season, I would not care, because his situation is just going to be so much better, like we kind of mentioned before. But looking at an ideal lineup for Joe, what are you guys thinking? This could be with this year's team, next year's team, or just skill sets in general.
Trying to remove bias as much as possible, and I promise I'm not sipping on the Kool-Aid. I feel like next year's team, obviously we don't know how the summer's going to play out, but I guess you can even say this year's team, plus the addition of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving into the offense. You got two high usage guys that obviously gravitational pull is, you know, kind of unparalleled in the NBA world. He's going to get his looks, and as we've seen, Joe Harris is pretty efficient once he gets those clean looks. I'd like to see, be it, you know, DeAndre Jordan, be it Jared Allen. I like to see an excellent role man in the offense, because that also is going to open up looks for him, because Kyrie Irving is absolutely excellent in the pick and roll. He can pass out of it efficiently. And as we know, Joe Harris, not too many players in the NBA are as great off the ball as he is. And he can, you know, find gaps in the offense, or sorry, in the defense, and either get looks near the rim or at the three-point line. So looking forward, or moving forward, I should say, I think this is honestly going to be an ideal lineup for Joe Harris. And as Nick mentioned, he's not going to have to be substantially better. If this iteration of Joe Harris is what we see next year, that's going to be completely fine.
Yeah, I literally, in my notes, I said what the team will be next season. You know, he's going to be the fourth or fifth best player in the starting lineup. And when you're the fourth or fifth best player rather than the second best player, you imagine that we see efficiency from years past. And, you know, when he is has an open shot, he's shooting it. And he's going to be getting a lot more open shots because of the gravity that KD and Kyrie do provide him. And it's going to be interesting to see what he can do, you know, with increased talent around him. You know, obviously we know how confident he is and how much better he is and more well-rounded he is as a player now. And to be able to do that with two of the best superstars in the game, hopefully fully healthy, you know, in 2020-2021, it's going to be a sight to see. And I think the Nets could have one of the more dangerous starting lineups in the NBA. I will put to you guys just a little bit. Could Joe come off the bench next season, depending on moves that are made in the free agency period?
It's funny. As soon as you said starter, that instantly popped in my head, because I don't think it's a lock that he starts, but it seems like the most likely scenario, because it kind of allows Kyrie and KD to do their thing, where Joe's taking a step back in terms of like, hey, he's just kind of being that catch and shoot guy. Like I mentioned before, he can react to the first actions that Kyrie or KD make. So, I mean, I think he could start. I also think he could come off the bench. It probably also depends on like the jump we see from, you know, Karis or Spencer or whoever is that two guard, or if they make a trade or something like that, or, you know, is Joe playing at the three or at the two, or who's playing where. I think there's like a lot of different variables. So I think either way, you know, starter or bench is an option. What are you thinking, Nolan?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, I completely agree with what you just said. I was going to actually just reiterate exactly what you just said. Joe Harris, I think there's versatility coming off the bench and acting as a, you know, sixth man, kind of like a flamethrower off the bench. That's a role that could work for him. Obviously, we don't know how the next coach, be it Jack Vaughn, be it Ty Lue, be it D'Antoni, whoever it is going to or how he's going to incorporate his rotations. We don't know if Caris LeVert is going to be off the bench. We don't even know if Caris LeVert is going to be on the team. So there's a lot of speculation when it comes to that. But I honestly believe if you had Joe Harris off the bench role, he can still get his, he can still thrive, he can still play 25 to 30 minutes a night. But, you know, having him on the court off opening tip and allowing, you know, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving to kind of be maximized with one of the best catch and shoot threats in the league makes a lot of sense too. Yeah. So either way,
I think one thing that could play a big factor is if they trade for a star. Like if they trade for, let's say, Bradley Beal or Drew Holiday, that person's instantly starting, and they're probably giving up Spencer and or Karis. If they give up both those guys, you might need Joe to be that scoring boost off the bench. We kind of mentioned how his skill set has improved. Like he would just have an opportunity to kind of get his volume up a little bit, and he's proven he can do it in a bigger role. So it's kind of like a nice safety net, obviously, as long as the Nets retain him, to have the option to either start him or have him come off the bench.
Yeah, we have seen him play plenty with the second unit. You know, I think that he's led the team in minutes in plenty of games. He's always out there for clutch situations. You know, generally the only thing that probably prevents him from being out there is against some really athletic teams and his defense. You know, if he's having to come up against some decent threes or fours or twos. Speaking about the touch on the coaching thing that Nolan sort of touched on, and I clearly have an answer in mind. That's why it's a question that I think I have a very clear answer to. What coach do you think would benefit Joe Harris the most for next season? Is it like, you know, Nolan?
I have a cheat code because I know you, Jack. It's Mike D'Antoni. I know that's what you're thinking.
Oh, are we on the D'Antoni train? Are we on the same page?
Absolutely, we are.
Oh, beautiful, dude. What's your opinion on it, Nick?
I mean, who's like, I'm definitely open to D'Antoni. I don't necessarily have a guy at the moment. I think, like, at this point, I just see the pros and cons to everybody. I think, like, my biggest question with D'Antoni is, like, can you push us over the championship hill? Obviously, he's had struggle with that. And then obviously there's some questions about his adjustments and rotations in the postseason. We saw that with the Houston team. He's a little bit limited. I'd be intrigued to see what would happen if he came to Brooklyn. I feel like it would get more to what we saw in Phoenix with Steve Nash. Obviously, they don't have a Steve Nash, but that 7 seconds or less, just kind of letting the offense loose. And I think for Joe, Kyrie, KD, Karis, Spencer, anybody who has a plus offensive skill set on the Nets would be super happy.
I mean, the reason I'm so damn big on D'Antoni is because he's three-centric, three-heavy, and maybe a lot of that is Daryl Morey. Daryl Morey's influence as well, but you know, you can bet that Joe Harris's, you know, 3-point shooting attempts are going to be increasing if he's in the D'Antoni run offense, and I think that that would benefit him greatly. That would give him that green light that he needs. And if we were to get a shitty old school coach like a Tom Thibodeau or Mark Jackson or Jeff Van Gundy, or, you know, I'm going to throw in Jason Kidd there because he's shit as well. I'm not going to refer to him as a venereal disease as a guest on JBT did, but he is not a coach that I do want for this team. And I think that Joe would benefit from those guys that give him those coaches that give him the confidence to just go out there and just shoot it. Just shoot it, play a game, play instinctually. That's what you want from good NBA players. That's what you want from any player, to be fair. You want them to just play instinctual basketball rather than having to think about what they're doing out on the court. You just shoot the ball when you get it. You just drive when you get it. You just play on instinct. That's what the superstars do. And I think every NBA player with at least a modicum of talent should do. And I think Mike D'Antoni would utilize the skills of Joe Harris in such a perfect way and allow him to flourish even more. Maybe the efficiency goes down. I don't necessarily care. If he's shooting, you know, three extra threes a game, he's going to be hitting at least one or two of them and if not three of them on numerous occasions. So I think that Mike D'Antoni, I think that for plenty of other players, would certainly benefit when it comes to Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. But focusing on Joe Harris specifically in his pod, I think that he would benefit from him immensely compared to a lot of other candidates.
I also think Ty Lue wouldn't be terrible, considering I think the Cavs broke a couple of the 3-point records while he was coach for in-game, right. You know, most threes in game. So at least he's a little bit modern. I don't think he'll take away from Joe. I agree with you, Jack, in the aspect though of some of those older coaches might just not let him get those attempts up, or just might be really difficult, which is, I hope, the reason they don't hire them.
Yeah, I think if I were to put my money on it, I would probably assume that Ty Lue is going to be the next coach of the Brooklyn Nets. And seems I'm not really likely. Opposed to that. Yeah, I'm not really opposed to that. From I've actually done more research on Ty Lue after I found out his name was really out there as a potential candidate. And from what I've read from prominent Cavaliers bloggers, is that he's really good in game adjustments. Obviously, his philosophies might align with Kevin Durant's and Kyrie Irving's. He's kind of that, you know, player's coach, or he knows how to manage personalities. And whether coaching purists like it or not, that's going to make a big difference when it comes to this Brooklyn Nets squad. I mean, we have, you know, enigmatic personalities, and having a Ty Lue who's been there, not just as a coach, but as a player too, with the early 2000s Lakers, for example. He's done that as a coach. He's been in those kind of locker rooms, and he's done that as a player as well. And I think that's a very important piece. But for one coach that I have my eye on, who I believe can absolutely maximize the offense with Joe Harris, as Jack Manuel said, and also just with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, is D'Antoni. I mean, the two knocks on him is that, A, he hasn't won. There's not really too many coaches in the league that have come closer to winning than D'Antoni. I mean, game 7 at home in Houston, obviously Chris Paul missed some time there too. If they don't miss, 98 threes in game 7, he'd probably win that series, and he'd probably go on to beat the Cavaliers. Or in 2007, you know, if Amari Stoudemire doesn't leave the bench and unfortunately gets suspended for game 4 of the 2007 Western Conference semis, the Suns probably beat the Spurs that year, and they go on to face the Jazz in the Western Conference Finals and the 07 Cavs in the NBA Finals. So that's, you know, probably two championships right there. And the defensive inadequacies, I think, can be, you know, a little far-fetched at time. I mean, the Houston Rockets, when they were one game away from the NBA Final, they had a 7th-ranked defense in terms of defensive rating that year. So I think he can alter his philosophies or alter his approach a bit to maximize Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And as Jack said, a Joe Harris type. Joe Harris is never going to have as much fun in the NBA offense as he would in Mike D'Antoni's.
Yeah, I think that's what makes D'Antoni so intriguing is just all the offensive weapons the Nets have in terms of like having so many different, you know, offensive plus players on the team. It's like they could get super creative with it. I mean, it will be interesting. Obviously, we're probably not going to have any news on a coach for what seems like a couple months now. But getting on to our last question, guys, where does Joe Harris rank at his position?
All right, now this is where
I'm going to leave the Jack.
I do the rankings. I'm the big rank guy. It's going to be tough when we get to like some role players, but I'll get creative with it. But I put out a tweet yesterday. I got a little bit of a response from it. I think it was probably I put it up a little bit too early in the morning. Just throwing out the best shooters in the league right now. And the guys that I chuck in there were Joe Harris, Davis Bertans, JJ Redick, and Duncan Robinson. And for me, those are the four best shooters in the league right now. Throwing Kyle Korver, you know, I think that's probably five, but you can only do four photos on a Twitter tweet. So we got some. I got a few responses. You know, Khalil, he had JJ, Joe, Bertans, Robinson, JJ, Harris, Bertans, and JJ, Joe, Duncan, Robinson, and Bertans from another person, and A. Rice, JJ, Harris, Duncan Robinson and Bertans. So it seems to me that, you know, JJ seems to be the consensus number one guy from a lot of other people. You know, he's done it for a very, very long time, and he's still doing it to a damn high extent in New Orleans. Is Joe, I guess, the consensus second best three-point shooter, volume guy, you know, flamethrower, you know, three-point perimeter threat in the league? What do you guys think?
I grouped him in that same catch and shoot guys. I didn't look at his position from a traditional sense and compare him to other threes. I think this is the better way of going about it, Jack. I would say yes. You know, JJ, he would have to be the consensus number one pick. I mean, he's just done it for, you know, now more than a decade. He kind of gave Joe Harris a, you know, a school lesson, if you want to say, in last year's playoff series as, hey, here's how you be effective as a catch and shoot threat when, you know, defenses tighten up. Joe Harris would be above Davis Bertans and Duncan Robinson for me personally, bias aside, just because, you know, JJ has done it for, you know, X amount of years and consistency has been there. But Joe Harris, now the consistency is really starting to come together. Whereas if Joe Harris shot, you know, below 40% next year, I think that would be a genuine surprise. Is that, do you guys agree with that?
I think it's fair. This would be his third straight season, I think, shooting over 40%. So, and like considering, even though we say he's just more than a shooter, like his main skill, his best skill is still shooting. So I think it would be a surprise, especially if he's coming off a big contract. We know Joe's is humble and he'll like work extra hard after signing that big deal.
Yeah, I'm going with Joe at probably equal to, because I'm quite high on Bertans, and maybe it's because, you know, I do a podcast with the Washington Wizards fan, and also because Bertans just has that little bit of extra height where we mentioned him in the pod in terms of the fact that we want Joe Harris to be more like Davis Bertans, and I think obviously that is because he is empowered by a guy like Scott Brooks, because they just play one side of the ball, they do Bill Murray, they just do offense. But in that sort of respect, I think that Joe Harris is never going to be 6'10". You know, he's never going to be able to get shots over pretty much most guys who are guarding him. But he can still, he has the IQ and smarts and wherewithal and mechanics to be able to get off those shots anyway. So I think that he can become a clear number two if he continues to shoot with volume, or if Mark D'Antoni becomes the Brooklyn Nets head coach. I think he can separate himself from the pack a little bit. You know, I think Duncan Robinson has been outstanding this season. I think he does deserve a lot of credit with what he has done. He's almost been like the Joe Harris season of old, you know, in terms of really getting out there. And now, can he do it again for next season when the pressure is on yet again for him? I think he certainly can. And maybe Duncan Robinson makes a little jump and makes things a little bit tougher for us to sort of discuss. But, you know, to be one of those sort of guys, and you look at the contracts that, you know, JJ Redick has gotten, you know, the 2 year sort of massive deals in Philadelphia, and, you know, another 2 year nice deal, despite being at the point in his career in New Orleans around that $25 million mark. You know, Davis Bertans is certainly going to be getting a lot of money in the offseason too. You know, and, you know, Nick and I, when we've done sort of team building exercises, we've had essentially either JJ Redick or Davis Bertans on one of our teams, or not JJ Redick, Joe Harris or Davis Bertans on one of our teams quite consistently. So I think it's close. I think it's JJ probably by himself, partly because of the consistency, partly because he's done it at important times in playoff games. And he has an insatiable competitiveness that I think is a really high level skill as well. And I don't think I want to see Joe Harris do it in the pointy end. You know, last year I was, you know, obviously disappointed when my favorite player wasn't able to step up against the Philadelphia 76ers. That's why I'm really hoping we do get some playoff level basketball this season. If, you know, everything is healthy and the players are healthy and staff are healthy and the wider environment is healthy, because I think Joe Harris's Team USA experience has reflected in some of his regular season play, in some of that clutch play that Nolan alluded to as well. And I think he would be able to take that confidence of playing against some of the best players and with the best players in the NBA and beyond into really important level basketball. And I'm confident and I'm excited to hopefully see that. And, you know, I think that it is, you know, if you're in the elite level at your position, you're going to be getting paid. And if you're at the elite level at your position, you know you're a damn good player. And Joe Harris is a damn good player.
Yeah, and just throwing in my two cents, I think JJ is definitely in probably a tier by himself because of the consistency, but I think, you know, the other guys can catch up to him. I'd probably have Bertans and Joe Harris in the same realm. You know, Bertans maybe doesn't have as high as percentage, but he definitely hits tougher threes than Joe does. Obviously, right. His volume's a little bit higher. Duncan Robinson, I think, is literally right with the guys. The only thing that's holding Duncan Robinson back for me is he has to prove to do it another season, because I think he's just as good as Joe and Davis Bertans, and he's on a crazy cheap contract. Obviously, the Heat are going to eventually have to pay him, but where would you guys rank Joe just in terms of like the shooting guard position? Did you have like a range or anything in mind, or maybe just like grade him on a skill above average starter, you know, six man? Like, what are you guys thinking?
Oh, well, man.
This is where we did like Caris LeVert the other day, and we had him like at 11th to 15th in that range, and who could push himself a little bit higher. So I guess Joe Harris in that realm would probably be in the late teens. I would probably go off the top of my head. In terms of if you're putting him in a six-man role as just a flamethrower off the bench, I think he would be the best guy in the league at that. But I think it's hard to gauge because his skill set is so different to guys like Caris LeVert, Devin Booker, these pure two guards. And well, Caris LeVert isn't a pure two guard. He's more of a utility sort of sort. But, you know, guys who are purely shooting guards. Joe Harris is, by definition, a shooting guard, but he has the size to play small forward. You know, I think he's, In some instances, he's played some bloody four for the Brooklyn Nets at times with Wilson Chandler out there as well. And he hasn't done too badly, I think, because, you know, we're looking at the offensive side of the floor. So, you know, Joe, I think, is that in that teens range. But I think the more important part is that he is elite in the skills that we want him to be at. And in the players that we were sort of alluding to, in JJ Redick, Davis Bertans, Duncan Robinson, Kyle Korver, Joe Harris is in that conversation and right at the top of it.
You know, if he continues to hover around 45 to 50% shooting, with you know, a good driving game, he shot 63.6% from the rim this year. If that can translate over the next year, that's obviously huge. If he's, you know, not a player that's a liability on the defensive end, which he hasn't been this year. You know, the Brooklyn Nets had an 8th-ranked defense, and Joe Harris, few players on the Nets really played more minutes than he did this season. So if that can translate over, that's going to be huge. He's like a B plus if I were to grade him. I think that would be fair. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, that's a good, it's a tough, I mean, if you're grading at the position overall, I think B plus is fair. But then, you know, we're giving him A plus with the likes of JJ Redick, Davis Bertans as you know, pure shooting perimeter threats. Because we look at the deficiencies that he does have. We try to be objective with two Joe Harris stands on the pod. But, you know, we know that he does have deficiencies in his game. And, you know, the ceiling that Joe Harris has compared to like Caris LeVert and many other young players and Nick Claxton and whoever, you know, this is the best of Joe Harris. We've seen the best of Joe Harris now. And I think that it's about sustainability and durability to be able to maintain that production that is going to be about how we grade Joe Harris going forward. And if we've seen guys like JJ Redick and Kyle Korver, you know, the sort of epitome of what we want Joe Harris to be, those guys have been doing it for nigh on a decade. Joe Harris has been doing it for 2 years, maybe nearly three. So I'm excited to see how Joe Harris can maintain that, because, you know, I think right now that we're not going to see a bad version of Joe Harris. You know, when we talk about sort of floors and ceilings, you know, his floor, we saw the depths of the basement in January where he was shooting, you know, just above 31% from the perimeter. And then he comes back and he's just like, all right, yeah, I'll just shoot 45% from three again. You know, I think a lot of it is just, you know, you have lapses. You know, you are playing 82 games in this long season and you're going to have lapses. Joe Harris has lapses. Kyrie Irving has lapses. The superstars have lapses. Maybe not the superstars. The super duper stars don't have lapses. But normal NBA players in the grind of a regular season that goes for months and months and months on end are going to have down periods. Shooters are going to have down periods, despite the fact that they are incredibly, you know, if I were to go through the game logs of Duncan Robinson, Davis Bertans, and JJ Redick, I guarantee you that they had months where they were shooting less than 40% from three. So for me, it's about sustainability for Joe Harris that can probably turn him, he's always going to be a B plus, but the more important part is he always going to be an A plus perimeter threat and in that realm of the 3-4 guys that we spoke about.
Yeah, obviously Joe's interesting, obviously considering his role and how it's going to change from season to season. But obviously, guys, you know I got to ask this. Are we confident that Joe Harris is going to be on the team next season?
There we go. I love this question. All right. So what's brought up, you know, quite often, too, to be honest with you, with Joe Harris's looming free agency status is that a lot of contenders don't have that much money to spend, you know, frankly, because of last summer's craziness. And I think why that's brought up is because Joe Harris and contender in the same sentence makes a lot of sense. He can augment your team's dynamic in a half-court setting, elite catch-and-shoot threat. Like, why wouldn't you not want that guy down your depth chart? And for the Brooklyn Nets, who have his bird rights and have the luxury of going over the cap to retain him, why wouldn't they resign him? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, 100%.
It makes little to no sense to not resign him, unless there is a incredible financial burden on Joe Tsai. You know, the Atlanta Hawks or the Memphis Grizzlies throw $20 million at him for 3 years, you know, and give him a $60 million contract or something terribly outlandish, then, you know, I think that we're going to see Joe Harris earn his payday and he's going to stick around. And, you know, we've compared on plenty of other pods and rewatches in terms of the importance that Joe Harris has to this team in terms of, you know, there's Spencer Dinwiddie and there's Caris LeVert. And in a lot of trade packages that we do bring up, Joe Harris isn't in those. One, because, you know, it's hard to do sign and trade possibilities, all that sort of stuff. But it's also because I think Joe has as much, if not more value, despite being a quote-unquote worse player and less talented player. You know, Caris LeVert, you know, can be a top, you know, 40 player in the NBA. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie is probably around that sort of range as well, if not, you know, quite consistently at that range. Whereas Joe Harris can be, you know, top 50 sort of guy because he's just so damn good at shooting threes, top 75, whatever range you want to put him at. But it's because of the tangible skills and the value he provides alongside the superstars. Whereas we know Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie have clashing skills with those guys. Caris LeVert doesn't have a flamethrower three-point shot. Neither Spencer Dinwiddie, despite the fact that both of those guys are getting better. And, you know, the percentages are somewhat reflecting it, especially when it comes to Caris LeVert, not for Spencer Dinwiddie. So I think he's going to be the priority in the offseason. And, you know, I know Corey said, you know, in a range from like $10 to $14 million, I think it could probably be a little bit higher. You know, we've seen quite a bit with Sean Marks, these sort of short deals to give the team flexibility going forward and not being hampered. I think we're going to see some sort of three-year deal. You know, if for Caris LeVert, I can't see him getting more money than Caris LeVert. So maybe 340 is a range that I could possibly see. You know, if Spencer Dinwiddie is on the team as well, he's going to be earning more money than Spencer Dinwiddie, which is something crazy to say. You know, and if Joe's, and I think Joe has the personality to be like, look, I don't really care. These guys are getting all this money. Give me less if it means, you know, a happy, harmonious locker room. Maybe we see a longer deal and some player options and some, you know, to sort of finagle it a little bit to sort of keep cohesion in that sort of realm of the possibility. You know, I think minimum he's getting more than $8 million per season that he got in that last contract. I think we see a minimum of 2 years on a contract as well and a maximum of probably four.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, ideally, you probably want to give Joe, like, 2 years, $32 million. I think you feel okay with that number, and you could take him away from other teams because I think someone's going to push you that high because, like Jack mentioned, teams like the Hawks, even teams like the Knicks, they could be interested in him just because of what they can provide. It also comes down to Joe's decision. Does he value money or does he value winning? If he values winning, coming back to the Nets makes the most sense. I mean, ideally, they like to get him at a cheaper price tag, but I wouldn't be surprised if they have to do a slight overpay because of the market, the limited free agents out there, and what can kind of happen. So it'll be interesting to see. I think after 16 mil, I think the Nets might start to get scared about the number because of how much it could lock them up in terms of, like, the money and just having all that cap. And if you're paying Joe Harris 17 or 18 mil, it just doesn't really make sense.
I have a magic number. You guys want to hear it?
Yes.
But I think it's going to be 2 at 28. I was looking at J.J. Redick's contract last year. He signed with David Griffin and the New Orleans Pelicans. I mean, you can point to, you know, last summer's free agency corp was quite more impressive than it is this year. But J.J. Redick, you know, he's kind of the standard when it comes to what Joe Harris, you know, wants and thrives to be. He was off a career year in Philadelphia. He got 2 years at 26.5. Obviously, you know, like I said, this free agency corp is not as impressive as last year's. The price may increase a bit for a Joe Harris type, but I honestly think the Nets can get it done at 2 at 28. And at 2 at 28, you sign that every single day of the week, because it's really is tough to find a piece as complimentary as Joe Harris, not just for what he does on the court, but off the court too. We saw he's, by all accounts, he seems like he's just an amazing guy in the locker room. He's, you know, good with the media. He answers questions eloquently and articulately. You know, we saw with China, for example, right? And those guys are hard to find, and they're invaluable. And if you have to do whatever it takes to sign Joe Harris, because with this offense, he's only going to be beneficial to the Brooklyn Nets now and moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a fair number too. I think you look at that JJ contract, and then you obviously, and you know, assume that it'll probably go up a little bit. Limited 3-point shooters, not as much cap out there. It'll get interesting too if the cap is lowered or anything like that because of obviously the China incident and this whole COVID-19 thing. How much does that drop? How much of an impact does that play on, in terms of signing? But I think I'm pretty confident the Nets will be able to retain Joe Harris.
I think that there is a range that sort of Nolan alluded to that we can sort of predict. You know, Torian Prince got 228, didn't he? Something around that sort of range.
229.
Yeah. I think the range is going to be 225 to 352, because Caris LeVert gets 352, Torian Prince gets 229, and I think Joe Harris is a better player, more valuable player. So I think if I'm Joe Harris's agent, I'm like, I'm better than this. Better than this guy. I'm not going to say bad things about Torian Prince because he's dropping fire and dropping bars for us on Spotify.
That was a good hit. That was a hit.
I need to re-listen to it, and we're going to be analyzing that probably more than any other part of his game on his preview pod. On his review pod, sorry. But yeah, I think that there's plenty of scenarios where we can sort of see, and I think that one thing that I do like and I am confident about is that Sean Marks has creativity in the way that the contracts have been structured. You know, we look at the fact that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant aren't on max contracts because that $10 million is going to DeAndre Jordan. You know, I think people continue to lose sight of that. And yes, DeAndre Jordan isn't worth $10 million, but Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are worth max contracts, and they're not getting that. You look at Caris LeVert's sort of 3-year, $52 million deal. You know, I think a lot of us expected him to be getting a lot more, but now I think it looks like a pretty fair deal. And if anything, we're probably getting some value back on that. Spencer Dinwiddie to be on such a bargain basement deal, 3 years, $30 million, you know, heading into free agency himself. You know, I think that they're, other than Torian Prince right now, the guys that are on the roster are all bargain contracts, or at least a version of a bargain contract for the Brooklyn Nets. And I don't think there are many teams in the NBA that can say, oh, every single contract we've got on the roster right now is absolutely money. And, you know, they're exceeding value, whereas, and obviously, you know, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are exceeding value because they're not playing, but in terms of they are super duper max players, we know that their talent proves that. But yeah, I think that that's one thing that I'm intrigued to see how Sean Marks and the capologists and contractologists go within the Brooklyn Nets organization in terms of, you know, what bonuses are in there for Joe Harris. You know, does he get an extra mil if he's hitting 45% from three in comparison to 40% from three or something like that? I think that's where the Nets can get creative. But if I'm Joe Harris's, manager and agent, you know, the free agency class right now is pretty weak. And if anything, Joe Harris is right at the top of that in terms of the skill set he provides in the modern NBA, like we've said plenty of times. So I'll be asking for a little bit, but I think that there is going to be a certain give and take because of what the Nets have done for Joe Harris's career.
And also the situation in terms of like the teams with money and the teams without money. Like, you can get money if you want, Joe, but you're going to probably be losing or back into another rebuilding scenario, which you already went through the last three seasons. Mm-hmm. So, but guys, any final thoughts on Joe Harris?
Well, I mean, I'm happy we were able to do a pod with Nolan, because I don't think there is a more perfect person for this podcast.
I appreciate that.
I'm really, really intrigued to see Joe Harris going forward. I think that he has one of the more fascinating futures within the NBA and the Brooklyn Nets than many other players. You know, we speak about quite consistently Spencer and Karras, and third superstar. And, you know, our boy gets forgotten sometimes. You know, he's out there, he's rehabbing his ankle. You know, he's shooting eggs into his frying pan for some reason, because he's practicing for next year's three-point contest as well. You know, that's what I envision life is like for Joe Harris. He's maintaining that beard with some nice essential oils that we all need. Maybe a bit of coconut oil. That's what I envision Joe Harris. You know, I reckon his beard smells glorious in a lot of ways. You know, he's obviously
doing PG here.
Hey, I'm just saying smell. He's doing the online learning. And, you know, as a teacher, you know, I'm a big fan of online learning. You know, anyone who's advocating to make themselves a better, more well-rounded human being and not just an NBA player, I'm all for that. And Joe Harris is going to be becoming one of the best people in the human race to ever step foot on this earth. There have been hundreds of billions of people that have stepped foot on the good graces of this blue and green earth. And Joe Harris is right up there in to get all analytic about it, in the 99th percentile of human beings. And glad we can do a podcast about him. I'm always enthused about the opportunity.
I'll give you an option to follow that up, Nolan, or you could just say goodbye.
You know what? All I'm going to really say is, you know, Joe Harris, he's at the Brooklyn Nets since 2016-17. He's seen, you know, he's been through the hard times. It would be nice to see him be able to be a part of a team in which he's developed, you know, quite a bit on and has become a fan favorite. It'd be really nice to see him have success on an actual contender. And maybe, who knows, maybe, you know, NBA landscape's always changing, but Brooklyn can host a parade here in the near future, and we, Jack and I, get to see, you know, Joe hoist Larry O'Brien with hopefully our pants on.
and beer dripping from his beard. So there you go.
Wow.
All right. Wow. But that wraps it up for the Joe Harris season review right there. Jack, Nolan, thank you very much. And big thanks, everybody, for checking us out. Find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.